All right, welcome back. Thanks, guys, for leading us. That was fantastic. I need two volunteers to come up front real quick. I need somebody to pick out two names. All right, right here and right over here. The guy that was standing up. You got my attention. Now, you're not allowed to pick your own name, brother. I'm sorry. What's your name?
Shepherd.
So if you pick out Shepherd, we're in trouble. We don't know what to do.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you a free book.
I'm cool with that.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, Micah.
Is there more than one Micah? Oh, Micah's not here. Oh, sorry, Micah. Okay, go ahead. Pick another one, bro.
Mariah.
Oh, right here. Okay. Well, congratulations. This is a Serving Leaders devotional. It's on the book of Matthew. I hope you enjoy it. And I would sign my name, but it'd probably diminish the value of the book. So it's entirely up to you whether you want me to sign it later. Okay, what name did you get?
Destiny Yoder.
Is she here? Oh, right there. All right, come on up, Destiny. And you get the second book. We're going to do another drawing tomorrow. And give these guys a hand for helping me out here. Thank you so much, guys. I'll take those and we'll just... We're good. All right. Okay. So if you haven't put your card in yet, you can still do that. It's up front here. And the cream always rises to the crop. So Destiny and was it Mariah? Congratulations. The rest of you are going to have to buy it. But you know, it got a really great deal. It's not 20 bucks. It's actually half price, $10 for you guys. So it's like the cheapest deal that I've got on my book. 10 bucks for a book. Not bad. All right, are we ready to roll on our second session? I know it's kind of like nap time, and apparently there was something with, was it Taylor Swift before I got here? I'm not sure I can compete with that, right? And then there were like t-shirts, and it's just like my boring old book has to get passed out after t-shirts. Are we good to go?
Yeah,
all right, okay. I know it's afternoon session, so let's jump right into it then in your notes. We were talking about influence, and I'd like to start out with the key verse. The key verse of our material, found in Matthew chapter 20:25-28. Could I have somebody stand up and read that in a loud, clear voice? Who'd like to volunteer? Stand up, read that in a loud, clear voice. Right here. Thank you. So what we've got here is what we would consider one of our key passages for this material that we're talking about. Does anybody know the context of this? Anybody want to guess at the context of these verses? What was happening in this story? Anybody remember? There were like two brothers, sons of thunder, and they came to their mom and they said, "Hey, mom, could you put in a good word for us with Jesus?" And she says, "Sure." And she goes up to Jesus and she says, "Hey, can my boys like sit on your right and your left hand in your kingdom?" And you have to wonder what the other disciples were thinking. You know, when mom was like, I didn't get my mom in there quick enough. In any case, Jesus used it as a learning or a teaching moment. And he says to them, guys, you don't know. First of all, you don't know what you're asking, which I think is pretty cool or pretty key. Because a lot of times we have these perceptions of what we want in life. We have these ideas of what success looks like, what life should look like. And we want to tell God, dictate to him what our lives should turn out to be. But the reality is God knows what's best. And I think we know that intellectually, theoretically. But in reality, do we really believe it? And so I think that's kind of a key point there. But Jesus says, not so with you. This is the way all the other guys think about it. They think about it lording over others. They think about power and authority and all this kind of stuff. But that's not the way my kingdom works. That's not the way discipleship, it's not the way leadership works. Power and authority is something that's given. And I don't know if you're aware of this or not. I don't know if you've ever thought about the idea of authority and power. But power and authority is something that we get as we live the life of a disciple and we become somebody worth following. Our lives take on a certain amount of authority. Does that make sense? You have authority just with who you are because of who you've become. And really, it comes back to the temptations that we looked at earlier today. Because the two key questions there, if you are the Son of God, is what Satan keeps saying. The two key questions that we need to answer for ourselves as disciples is, who am I and whose am I? And if I can understand the depth of that, who am I and whose am I, who am I in him, my life can take on an authority and a power. The disciples didn't even know what they were asking. And Jesus kind of turns the whole thing around and says, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. We're going to jump right into our small groups again. So if you want to go to your area where you were earlier this morning, get into groups of three. If you're new this afternoon, we broke everybody up into groups of three. I want you to just jump into an existing group or make a new group if you're here for the first time this afternoon. So let's get into our groups and then wait for your further instructions. Get into your groups of three. Wait for your instructions. Make sure you have your notes. All right, guys, do you remember the drill this morning about how we chose a group leader? Do you remember this? Yeah? Okay, so we're going to be democratic again. We're going to do it again. We're going to choose a new group leader. So fingers to the sky. Fingers to the sky. One, two, three, boom. If you have the most fingers pointed at you, you can choose the same person if you want. That's fine. All right, listen up, listen up, listen up. Listen, listen, listen. We have to always upgrade our systems, right? If you're still working in DOS 6.0 or Windows 3.1 or Windows 95, we feel so sorry for you, we'll give you a new computer, right? We're always upgrading, and if you get really smart, you get a Mac, right? Oh, I have a few Mac fans out there. All right. So we have to upgrade our system right now from the point system to the uppoint system. If you had the most fingers pointed at you, you get to choose somebody in your group. Yes! That's not a big deal. Just choose somebody to lead the discussion. What we're going to do, we are going to work through the application questions back on page one. Back on page one, what do we learn about Jesus' leadership from this passage? What do we learn about Jesus' disciples? What is Jesus teaching me personally? And what I want you to do is not just based on this text, but also reflect on the morning session. Share that with your group. What are we learning about Jesus' leadership? What are we learning about his disciples? What are we learning personally? All right? Don't do the personal commitment one yet. Just do those three. Okay? Just work down through those. If you're the group leader, you get everybody talking. Maybe you go first, set the example, and we'll give you 5 minutes for this. It's going to be a quick one. So you're going to have to rock and roll all the way through. And I'm going to have a clock up here on the screen. If you're the group leader, you've got to keep your group hopping. All right? Keep watching the screen. Go. Okay, if I can have your attention, and you can either go back or just stay where you're at. It's totally cool with me. There's no probs here. Hopefully that was just insightful for your groups to kind of share, talk about it. We're not going to really debrief any of that. We're just going to keep right on moving. I'd like to talk just very, very quickly about what we use as a definition for serving leadership or discipleship here, and it's simply this. Someone worth following who accomplishes a higher purpose by developing others. We're about something bigger than us, and I know there's lots of great definitions out there for either leadership or discipleship that are maybe even better than this one, but that's the one that we use. Following somebody worth following and developing people, that's the concept we want to kind of hit there. Winston Churchill captured this definition when he said, we make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. All right? We make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give. This depicts a problem too often present in our leadership. And so I want to just talk very, very briefly about the two roles of serving leadership. In your notes, you're going to notice the arrows that go down, the arrows that go up. The first role of I think, when we're discipling others, when we're leading anyone else, is we have to understand that we have to be a leader worth following, and that means that we have a compelling vision. We're able to cast something before someone else that interests them, excites them, that makes them want to join or become like us. And so The idea here is that Jesus said, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Now, they knew all about fishing for fish. They had no idea about fishing for men. But Jesus kind of holds out this incredible new vision for them about fishing for fish for men, and they leap to it. He had a vision that he cast out in front of them. So the traditional pyramid stands. The top down, we're at the top with a compelling vision, and people respond to that vision. And if they don't respond, that's okay. There's a passage that says, don't cast your pearls before swine. That doesn't mean that we call people pigs if they don't follow our vision. That's not the point there. It's just that when people aren't responding, you move on. Jesus said you shake the dust off your feet and you go to the next village. And it's just as simple as that. We invest in people who are interested. I think this is where sometimes in discipleship we call it being fair, being equal. And just so I can dismiss that myth for you very quickly, Jesus was not fair. Not fair in terms of equality. And I know that kind of blows our minds going, seriously? Like Jesus had to be fair. God's fair. No, God is just. And there's a big difference between justice and fairness. So when we read in the Bible that all we like sheep have gone astray, we've each turned to our own way, and that the Lord has laid on him the iniquities of us all, that's talking about justice and righteousness. I'm glad that we have a God who is just and not fair. If God was fair, every one of us would be burning in hell. Every one of us would have faded away like the grass in the field, the psalmist says. Not one of us would stand, David said. Not one of us. That would be fairness. Righteousness is the most unfair thing happening to the Son of God on your behalf and my behalf. That's righteousness. That's the justice of God. That's good news. All right. So the idea of being fair, and the reason I'm saying this is because we want to treat everybody equally. Now, in my family with my kids, when they were younger, if there were three pieces of candy and they were all different sizes, you know as well as I do that I was in big trouble, right? I'm not talking about that kind of fairness, where I try to give my kids all the same benefits or whatever it is. I'm talking about Jesus developing people at different levels. He had the three. We looked at that this morning, Pete, Jim, and John. And then he had the 12, right? He had the 70. And he spent different amounts of time with different people. That's discipleship. You can't give all your time to everybody equally. You're going to have a leadership, a discipleship that goes an inch thick all the way across. You can't go deep with the few to impact the many. So this is a key discipleship principle. So the shepherding role, and sometimes we struggle with this idea of shepherding because Psalms 23, lead in green pastures. We think about Holmes County, Ohio, or Lancaster County, where, you know, there's just lush and green, like the lawn out here. But if you go over to Israel, there's like little tufts of grass kind of hidden behind the rocks, and it's like a desert. And the shepherd, he kind of leads a sheep here, and he leads them over here, and he leads them over there. And also over there in the old land, they would have these sheepfolds at night that were like rocks, like a wall of rocks around like in a corral or like an enclosure. And a lot of times, these rock enclosures had no door. And guess where the shepherd slept? In the doorway. That's why Jesus said, I am the door to the sheep. So the shepherd is the one who protects. He's the one that leads. He nurtures his sheep. He takes them where they need to go to find good pasture. And it's like my daily bread. Each sheep gets their daily bread. They don't get to go out there and you know, live in this lush green pasture like we imagine. It was completely different. So the shepherding role, it gets people to where they need to go in the moment, gives them their daily bread, helps them with where they're at in their vision. We're actually going to visit this again when we talk about developing people. A leader adjusts their style to where their sheep are at. You disciple people where they're at in the journey, all right? So when you work with somebody and you're in a discipleship mode, they might not be ready for something that you want to give them. You might have to wait for a while. I mean, that's kind of how my life is. I'm about 45. And I'm still in grade one on certain areas, by the way. And then in some areas, maybe I'm up at grade four or grade five. But there are different places in my journey that God took a long time until he visited that area in my life. Okay? So part of my life testimony, when I was younger, I committed acts of vandalism against a private school where I grew up. I committed acts of vandalism at an Amish farm close to where I grew up. You guys haven't gasped too bad yet. How much worse shall I get? I have different things in my past that when I turned like 19, 20, and God began to do a deeper work in my life, and I prayed this most ridiculous prayer. Don't pray it. It's dangerous. But it was like this. God revealed to me if there's anything in my life that is preventing me from further growth, further development in my life. And God began to bring some things back to my memory. And one of them was the vandalism. The other one, the act against the Amish farmer. And then there were a certain number of others that God did not remind me about until a year later. Because he knew I couldn't have handled going back and making restitution if he would have thrown everything at me. All right? But my life is a series of opportunities and journeys toward wholeness. And I'm sure there's a long way for me to go yet. So I share that with you because a shepherd is wise. A shepherd leads. And that's what God does in our discipleship. He reveals things to you. When I say don't pray that dangerous prayer, I meant that tongue in cheek. Do pray that prayer. But if you do pray that prayer, mean that prayer. That was one of the most liberating things. It's not actually part of my talk this time. I do an entire session on taking care of your past. But one of the most powerful things that happened to me is when I went back and began to make restitution, I began to go to a new level of freedom, a new level of clear conscience. And my life began to take on some new, I could even call it vistas of joy. I began to sense a greater release in my life, even as a good Christian kid growing up in a good Christian home. Things in my life that I had to take care of began to set me free for being a future disciple maker. So that's for another time, another session. Main point here is that the leader is responsible and the people are responsive. But then when it comes to implementing, everything changes. We flip the pyramid upside down. Let me skip over this one. And you as a disciple maker or a serving leader, you are now supporting those that you are helping. And this is where a lot of leaders don't get it. Leaders think, I'm going to be on the top, I'm going to be up here, or I'm a disciple maker, so I'm going to be up here always teaching my little peon disciple. No, it doesn't work that way. You ask, what does my disciple need? What can I do to help them? But then you come underneath and you say, how can I serve you? How can I help you? What do you need from me? And you are there to walk with them, help them, and you are there to serve them. That's the model that we are presenting. And so it is a partnership. Serving leaders serve and support their people as they implement the vision. As your disciple, as the people you lead begin to grab the vision, begin to move forward, you do everything you can in the background to make them successful. A successful leader is somebody who raises up a successor. You are not successful unless you raise up successors. And I would like to add people who will go beyond your level of success. Did you hear me? See, a lot of leaders are about themselves. And Jesus said these most ridiculous words one time. He said, greater works you will do when I go back to the Father. Now, if that doesn't blow your circuits, it should. Greater works you will do when I go back to the Father. See, that's discipleship. It's setting up others for success. It's saying, you're going to go out and do things so much greater, so much broader, so much grander. Now, when I read that, greater works you will do, understand that Jesus was one. We talked about limited leadership this morning. We're limited in who we are. This is why we need to think in terms of movement. What can I do to reproduce myself and produce many of me? He can go out and produce many, many more of them. Impact the few, disciple or lead the few to impact the many. Yes. You know, that's a great question. Somebody Google that real quick. I can't pull it up in my data bank right now. Greater works you will do when I go back to the Father. I think it's in John. Somebody get it real quick on your phone, and if you haven't turned it off. Somebody, real quick, can you Google that for us? Somebody got it? You guys are supposed to be real fast for me here. And I did have an LTE signal, so we should be able to grab this one real quick. That's a great question. Greater works you will do when I go back to the Father. John 14:12. Thank you, Trevor. Oh, I messed it up. I like Trey and Trevor. I was like, okay. So thank you. John 14, one more time. 12. John 14:12. Great question. The rest of our time together, we're going to be looking at these three dimensions, all right? These three dimensions. The being part of discipleship or leadership, it begins in the heart. And then there is the knowing part, the head, we could say, of leadership. And then finally, the hands refer to the doing or the behaviors, okay, of what we do. So discipleship, serving leadership, is about those three dimensions. It's who I am, it's what I know, it's what I do. And we have to look at all three aspects. So we're going to be looking at that at the rest of our time together. I'd like you just to take one moment now, go back to page one, look at that personal commitment. And in the quietness of your little space where you're at, I want you to answer the question, what needs to change in my life based on what I have learned so far today? This is personal. This is something I want you just to take a moment and write down. This is what's going to change in my life because of what I've heard so far. This is what God's speaking to me about. Again, if I just came and challenge you with information, it's a waste of my time and yours. I want to know what's going to change, all right? And this is your moment to say, God, what needs to change in my life based on what I've learned so far? Go ahead and write that down. If you need a pen, by the way, let me know. We do have some pens, so. We have extra notes, too, if you don't have notes. Okay, we're going to start now with the being part of serving leadership, of discipleship. Robert S. McGee once pointed out that if Satan had a formula for self-worth, it would be when my performance plus the opinion of others equals my self-worth. All right, that's Satan's formula for self-worth. When the opinion of others and my performance are added together, that equals my self-worth. It's a terrible formula, by the way. And yet a lot of people, a lot of us have kind of bought into that. Let me say that one more time. The opinion of others and my performance equals my self-worth. Satan's formula. Robert S. McGee. And unfortunately, a lot of people have bought into that formula. I would like to now look at the fruit of the Spirit. And just to do a quick little assessment, this is always interesting. When you self-assess yourself, I want to ask your brother or your sister if they're here to assess you, because that might be a little different. But just do a quick self-assessment, 1 to 5. How would you rate yourself on the fruit of the Spirit? What areas do you have to work on? Love, are you at a 1 or a 5? 5 being greater, 1 being less, all right? And where would you put yourself out on the issue of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control? Just kind of rip that one down real quick, run through it. And then we're going to take a look at how Jesus defined these different fruits. And it might be actually surprising to you, some of the things about these fruits that are a little bit differently defined than what you might normally define them as. So we're going to run into that here in just a few seconds as you wrap up your self-assessment. Jesus was an example of these gifts. The first one we're going to look at is love. Love. And again, your assessment might change as you hear these definitions. John 15, 12 to 13, greater love has no man than this, and he lays down his life for his friends. For love, for Jesus, it means to serve a person for their good and because of their intrinsic value, not because of what the person brings to you. See, we have a very humanistic and very worldly view on love. It's based on the Greek word eros, and it's about what can I get from you? What's in it for me? Most of Hollywood's depictions of love today are all very self-centered. But God's concept of love is agape, and this is an others-oriented love. It's about their intrinsic value, who they are made in the image of God. The opposite of love is fear. Perfect love casts out fear. And so self-protection and abusing people is the idea that this is the opposite. And we have to move away from that toward this agape love. Luke chapter 10, verse 21, after their mission, we're now talking about joy. Jesus, full of joy, said, "I praise you, Father. You have hidden from the wise and the learned, but you've revealed to these little children." Jesus was filled with joy. Joy is delight in God and in his salvation for the sheer beauty and the worth of who he is. Opposite is hopelessness and despair. I don't know if you've ever done this, where you've gone out on a starry night and just, you know, maybe unrolled your sleeping bag, maybe laid on the trampoline, or our family does this every once in a while. We just did this in Colorado a bit ago. We stopped our vehicle and out there in Colorado, there was no city lights where we were up on a ranch, and we just stopped our vehicle as we were going in this road, and we got out of the vehicle and we just looked up at the stars for a while. And we just worshiped the sheer beauty and the vastness and the greatness of God by looking at his creation. David said, "The heavens declare the glory of God." Okay? Yeah, have you ever experienced this joy where you've just been in the presence of God and you've just been kind of overwhelmed with the sheer beauty of who he is? See, that's true worship, where we're just kind of overwhelmed by God. I have this theory that heaven is going to be all about God showing off his glory forever and ever. I think God is so great, he's so awesome, we can't have any thought that's greater than what God is. We can't even comprehend the idea of God. We're kind of blown away by this concept of Trinity, by the way. But I think it's going to take all of eternity for God to show off who he is. I think that's what heaven's going to be. Heaven is going to be God taking us on his amazing whirlwind tour of the cosmos, showing us his glory. And I just think it's going to be this amazing, sheer, absolute beauty that we are going to experience God forever and ever and ever. You all know that verse in Ephesians chapter 2, "For by grace are you saved through faith, that not of yourselves is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast." Right before that, he says, in the ages to come, God is going to show off his glory forever and ever. That's where I base that theory on. I'm translating that verse. But the reason I brought that, Ephesians 2, 8 through 10, because we know those verses really well, "For by grace are you saved." But go right before that, and it says, in the coming ages, God is going to show off his absolute glory and beauty forever and ever. That's what heaven's going to be. I was actually bored once when I was young with the idea of heaven, because I thought it was laying on a hammock, plucking grapes off a vine, and playing guitars around the throne forever and ever. I think we have it wrong. I think it's going to be about God. I think it's going to be about God. It's not going to be about us. It's going to be about him. And because it's all about him, it's going to be the greatest thing there is. If heaven is about us, it's going to be awfully boring. Amen? Have you looked in the mirror lately? It's going to be awfully boring. All right? Joy is delight in God and his salvation for the sheer beauty and worth of who he is. This next idea of peace, confidence and rest in the wisdom and sovereignty of God rather than in your own. The opposite is anxiety and worry. I remember as a kid growing up, an artist was trying to capture the idea of peace. And you know, the one artist, he puts this picture of a bird in a nest up there in the middle of a mountain by a peaceful lake, and that's his idea of tranquility and peace. The other artist puts this bird, you know, in this little branch hanging over a waterfall. And this is the closest image that I could capture for that. But that's peace. Peace in the midst of all those crazy things that give us anxiety and worry. Because we live in a crazy world, right? We live in a crazy world, and it's going to keep getting crazier, guys. Let's just face it. But we can have that peace. This is a peace that Jesus had in Gethsemane. The peace that passes all understanding. All right? So that's the kind of peace we're talking about. This next word here is patience. Jesus restoring Peter, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep." Jesus was extremely patient with Peter. And those are those three times where he says, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep," is him restoring Peter after the three denials that Peter had. Each of those are a restoration of Peter. And patience is the ability to take trouble from the others of or life without blowing up. If I would have been Jesus, I would have blown up a long time ago with Pete, okay? I just wouldn't have made it as long as Jesus. But Jesus had this incredible patience. And the opposite, of course, is resentment toward God and toward others, okay? So that's how we're defining patience. Moving very quickly here, kindness. Jesus is concerned about the disciples falling into temptation in Gethsemane. If you look at Mark chapter 14, 32 to 38, Jesus comes back and he's like, hey guys, be careful or you'll fall into temptation. There's this amazing concern that he has for them. All right. And so the idea of kindness is practical kindness with vulnerability out of a deep inner security. The opposite, of course, is envy, the inability to rejoice with others. Goodness. Jesus and Nicodemus is a great example here in John chapter 3. The light exposes evil. Whoever lives by the truth comes into the light. Goodness is the idea of integrity. And our integrity is based not on what people see in the public, but what is in our private. And so if we see an iceberg, we need to always realize that probably 70% of that thing is underneath the surface, right? You will only be as successful in your public sphere as you are in your private sphere. That makes sense. This is an integrity issue. If you're a person of goodness, this means that you have an inner integrity way below the surface that sustains and buoys up that which is public, that which is external, that's that which everybody else sees. Here's a great one for a bunch of non-resistant Mennonites. Jesus committed to going to Jerusalem, and it says that the disciples were astonished. They were afraid. They were like in wonder at Jesus' faithfulness, his loyalty to his commitment. Okay, and so a dog, the connection of a dog and a soldier in a war, you know, with all the IEDs and all the things that that dog will do for a soldier, there's this incredible loyalty, right? Incredible faithfulness. And that's what really depicts Jesus in the commitment that he had going to Jerusalem, no matter what comes. I'm going to Jerusalem. I know they're going to nail me to a cross. I'm faithful. I'm loyal to my Father. And the opposite, of course, is disloyalty. One who takes advantage of another out of self-interest. Okay? So we're defining faithfulness as courage and loyalty, commitment to one's principles, true to one's words. This next image here, Jesus with children. I love the way this guy is down on the kids' level. Disciples tried to stop them, for the kingdom belongs to such as these, Jesus said. And the idea of gentleness here is one of humility and self-forgetfulness. The opposite is superiority, one who is self-absorbed and proud. And I'm just going to give you a little practical tip right now. I want you to practice this for the rest of your life, and you're not going to, you know, see me glaring over your shoulder if you don't. But when you work with children, and I've had to bring myself to do this, but so many times I've told myself I don't have time for kids, right? I don't do well with children, and so my own kids, absolutely. But everybody else's kids, you know, forget kids. And what I've had to do, I like to get down on one knee, and I'd like to look children in the level. Now I know you're looking at me going, Luke, you're really, really short, so you really don't have to get down that low. But for me, I like to get down on one knee and look them on the level. There is something about children that we can learn so much from. And I'm a short guy, so I'm always looking up to people like Keith back here. And I just wish he would get down on one knee when I meet him. It would make me feel so good. I'm just kidding, Keith. I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that at all. You know what's funny? I just had this memory. We were in Uganda a couple years ago. We walked into this church. We were going to be teaching this material. And would you believe it, as we walked into the pastor's office, a guy was sitting on a throne. Yeah, he was sitting on a throne, like a raised platform with a massive wooden chair with a huge high back on it. And as his attendant came in, he literally knelt down in front of the pastor and put his arm on the chair and looked up at him to speak to him. I will never forget that. So Keith, please don't do that to me, all right? Please don't do that to me. That's not my point. And to this young man's credit, because they've got kind of this tribal, kingly, chieftain thing. They don't really have this idea of serving leadership. To his credit, at the end of our event, he said, my leadership's going to really change after this. And he said it publicly. So I was glad to hear that. But I'm just telling you, I didn't really have a category for a pastor on a throne, okay? I just kind of blew all my circuits. All right, where are we at? We're looking at gentleness. The next one here is self-control. I'd like you to think about Mark 15, where Jesus was insulted while on the cross. You know, if he would just come down, we would believe in him. Can you imagine the power of those words, how Jesus had to resist calling tens of thousands of angels? This is why I told you this morning, Jesus did not pull out his God card, didn't wear a t-shirt that said, "I am, deal with it." Jesus was tempted. This is the idea of self-control. Jesus on the cross. How many times are we in environments where somebody says something against us, they attack our character, whatever it is, and we just want to defend ourselves, but we say nothing? That's self-control. And that is incredible for a disciple, where you do not defend yourself. You don't stand up for your rights. I want to tell you something as a Canadian coming to America. That was one of the hardest things for me, and I kid you not, that was one of the hardest things for me as a Canadian, coming to America and hearing all this talk about our rights. I thought Christians didn't have any rights. And I heard my Christian brothers and sisters in the Mennonite church talking about our rights as Americans. I want to tell you something. As people of the kingdom, we do not have any rights. Did you know that? This is what it means to be a disciple, to be so sold out that we have no rights. And honestly, our allegiance to America, seriously? My allegiance to Canada, seriously? We're more postmodern, by the way, than you guys are down here. And I haven't been in Canada for a long time. I mean, I go back and visit, but this America stuff, this Canadian stuff, this homely kingdom stuff that we're trying to do and our rights, this should not be named among us, young people. I think your generation can change this. I'm amazed. I really am. I'm honestly amazed at how political we Mennonites are. Can I just meddle a little bit here? I mean, right now, as I'm traveling around meeting people, and you mentioned the Trump word or the Hillary word, people just go off. It's like, what kingdom are we a part of? We really believe that Trump's going to save this country or Hillary's going to save this? Do we really believe that? Did Bush do it? Did Obama do it? Did any of did anyone save our world? Where is our allegiance as disciples? That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to get any more on that. And if you want to tell some great, you know, joke later, that's fine. I just believe as a disciple, we have a much higher calling. We don't have rights. And for us to use self-control as disciples, to let people run us down in the kingdom. They did it to Jesus. They scorned him, and Jesus took it all on the cross. You and I are to bear the pain and the suffering of the world around us. That's what it means to be a disciple. I won't say any more than that. The opposite, of course, is a driven, impulsive, uncontrolled person who says, "I'm going to do the donuts. Forget that stupid apple." All right, so the question here is, what have you learned regarding the fruits of the Spirit? How would your assessment now change that you've heard of maybe a little bit of a different definition on that? We're going to move on, and we're going to come to a breakout group here shortly. So the key question now is, who are we trying to please? Who is our audience? I don't know if you've ever thought about this. Who is my audience? We're all, you know, high school seniors and this whole thing of peer pressure that we hear about all the time. This is a big deal. But we either serve God as our ultimate audience of one, or we serve people as our audience of one. And what happens when we serve people? Look at your diagram. When we have people as our audience, we lead from either pride, which leads to self-promotion and self-exaltation, or we lead out of fear and insecurity, which leads to people-pleasing. And we all struggle with this. But the question I want to ask us is, when we put our head on the pillow at night, can we say in our hearts, "I live to please my audience of one. I didn't live to please, to lead for people's opinions, popularity. I didn't lead out of fear, and I didn't lead out of pride. I didn't lead, I didn't live, I didn't disciple to make people love me." It's not about that. It's about pleasing my audience of one. This image here comes from a business book, Jim Collins, Good to Great. He talks about people with high levels of leadership, serving leadership. High levels of leadership are those who, when things are going well, they look out the window and they say, "My team did it. It's all about them. It's all about my people. It's all about the people that God has granted me to lead and steward." And when things are going bad, they look in the mirror and they say, "I take responsibility. I didn't disciple that person very well. I didn't do a very good job of this. D.L. Moody, you ever hear this story about somebody who came to him one time and said, hey, I met one of your converts. He's down there in the gutter, stone drunk tonight. And Moody said, yeah, he's probably one of my converts. Obviously, God didn't convert him, you know. But we take responsibility. That's the idea here. And when we lead to please God, we have this humility, this high level of humility that says, I take responsibility when things go wrong. And when things are going really well, I look out the window and I bless those who are on my team, those who I am working for. Humility because we see ourselves in light of who God is, and that leads us to courage. We lead with courage, confidence and assurance in who we are and in whose we are. Back to the temptations, all right? Who are you, right? Jesus from Satan, if you are the Son of God. We lead from who we are and whose we are. It's not based on my gifts and abilities. It's not based on my skill set. It's not based on all the great things I've done. It's based on who I am in him. And he has called us and he has equipped us for whatever task is at hand. Now, if we lead out of pride or fear, this will always cause us to separate from others, compare ourselves with others, or distort the truth about reality. It becomes a very temporal focus. The opposite is also true. When we lead with humility and courage, that causes us to build community with others, have contentment and be generous, and base everything on the truth and see life as it really is with an eternal focus. So I rushed through that very quickly because we're rapidly running out of time, and I just wanted to cover some of this material before we went into our breakout activity. A great example, actually, of this discussion on pride and fear is when you get to Jesus and Pilate. And I know a lot of times when we read the crucifixion story, we think that Jesus was on trial. But go back and read that. Go back and read that passage in John. And it's rather fascinating to see who really was on trial that day. Who do you think it was? It wasn't Jesus. It was Pilate. It was Pilate that was really on trial. And he was controlled by the internal forces of pride, his Roman position of power and authority. He says, don't you know who I am? I could, and Jesus says, you don't have any authority unless it was given to you. Jesus has just these amazing responses. All right? Pilate is the one on trial. Jesus knew who he was and he knew whose he was. Pilate gave in to those external pressures. He was leading to please the crowd. And so when the mob came up to him and they said, you're no friend of Caesar unless you do this. And you are not, and the crowd, Pilate knew better. His wife had had a dream. His wife knew better. She said, don't have anything to do with this righteous guy. Pilate knew that he was innocent, but he bowed to the crowd. He did what was motivated externally. And you and I are to live by internal motivations, not the external. That's pride and fear, all right? And so this is a completely different paradigm. I want to introduce you to this concept by using a word that we're all very familiar with. It's the word ego. Ego. But ego is something that we tend to think in terms of only negative. I'm going to give you a negative and a positive side this afternoon. And then we're going to go out to the back and right here, Candace. What are the possibilities of getting those circles of chairs set up? We can get that? Now, you don't have to go yet, because I'm sure a lot of us can help as well. But what does that look like in terms of the other group over there?
I think they're done.
They're done? Does anybody know, is the group over there done?
There's a lot out there.
So what we're going to have to do is get two circles of chairs. I'm looking at the size of the group here. I think that's what we're going to do. Keith, if you want to help out, that would be great. Get two circles of chairs out there somewhere, separate from each other. But Candace, I need you in here because I'm going to explain and you're going to be in charge of one of the groups. So you can't go too far. So ego, in the negative sense, is edging God out. When we edge God out of the equation through pride and fear, when we give in to leading out of pride, oh, I'm the blessed controller around here. I'm the Mr. Leader. I'm the big shot. I've got all the answers. That's pride. Confidence in who we are, not in whose we are. The other side is fear. I self-protect, and I'm all concerned about not offending anybody. I lead out of fear. We edge God out through either pride or fear. And pride is always where we are self-exalting or self-promoting ourselves. We're name-dropping. We're trying to make ourselves look bigger than what we really are. And the other side is that we are fearful, and therefore we're always protecting our character, our reputation. We become manipulative. Okay? And so the idea here is that we edge God out through either pride or fear, and this always leads to separation. Always. It separates relationships when we lead or disciple out of pride or fear. And the positive ego, on the other hand, is exalting God only. Exalting God only. This is where you and I recognize the gifts and abilities that God has given us. We recognize our purpose. We recognize that we are here for a reason. And we stand up and we say, I'm going to use my God-given gifts, abilities, and talents to exalt him only, to make him famous. I'm going to live with purpose and intentionality. All right? I'm going to change the world that I can change. I'm going to exalt God only. And this is where we have a humility and a confidence. And this always leads to community. Always leads to community. And so we've got the positive ego, exalting God only. Would you say that with me? Exalting God only. Let's try that again. Exalting God only, or the negative ego, which is edging God out. Edging God out. So what we're going to do, and you know, I just thought of this, Candace, we could even sit on the floor. Would that be the simple thing, is just sit on the floor?
We got a room down in the basement.
Okay.
We have a bunch of chairs.
Okay. Okay. Or just sit.
Or just sit on the floor.
I don't want to make a big deal of this. So what we're going to do is we're going to break up into two different groups. And we're going to have a little bit of fun with this. This is my first time to Greenwood, Delaware that I'm aware of. I don't think I've ever been in this area before. So we are going to launch for the first time ever an Egos Anonymous group. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. Oh, Keith, you know all about you? Oh, you haven't been to one. Okay. All right. So Keith knows about Alcoholics Anonymous. Basically, what they do with these AA groups is sit around a circle. So we're going to sit around a circle. We're going to have two different groups. One group's going to go with Candace. One group's going to go with me. Candace is going to be, you're going to go first. I'm going to go first. And we're going to model this thing. And we're going to hold an Egos Anonymous meeting. And how it's going to look is you're all going to be sitting, and the first person's going to get up. In this case, it's going to be Candace or myself. And I'm going to get up, and I'm going to say, hi, my name is Luke. And you're going to say,
hi.
Have you guys been to AA meetings? I thought it was only Keith back there. So you're going to say, hi, Luke. And then I'm going to say, I have a problem. It's the first thing we have to say. I have a problem. If you want to say, I am an egomaniac, I have an ego problem, or you just want to say, I have a problem, that's fine, okay? And then I want you to describe your problem. I tend to lead out of fear, or I tend to lead out of pride, and this is how I do it. So I'm going to do it, okay? So hi, my name is Luke, and I have a problem. I tend to lead out of pride many times with my family. When my family has an idea, maybe it's where we're going to go, you know, maybe out for supper or go on vacation or do something, sometimes I will power over them and say, no, my way or the highway. And sometimes I think my way is the best way, and I'll be very strong in expressing my opinion and shutting down those in my family that have opinions that are different than mine, because I think my way is the best way, and I will shut them down. And then I'm done, and you will all do this. And then the person to my right will get up and say, hi, my name is Janice. Hi, Janice. And Janice will say, I have a problem. And then Janice will say, and I tend to lead out of fear or lead out of pride. And she'll describe it in about 10 seconds. She'll sit down and we'll all do this here. Okay. Now, why are we doing this? It's a good question. Just for fun? Do you know how many of us in our discipleship live out of pride and fear? How many decisions we make out of pride and fear? And so when we are honest and open about our problems and we are willing and able to share with each other, and I want you to be specific, I want you to be honest. Guys, seriously, this is going to be a lot of fun, but it can also be pretty serious. When we begin to share that, it actually begins to break the power of those prides and those fears in our lives. And we begin to realize that we're not the only ones dealing with those. Every one of us in here deals with fear and pride. Did you know that? Every one of us does. We live with fear and pride. We have to break this as disciples. And so we want to practice this. One of the things that I'm hoping you're noticing, picking up without me saying it, and I will just highlight this right now, is just like those application questions What do we learn about Jesus' leadership? What do we learn about Jesus' disciples? What is Jesus teaching you personally? Those are discipleship questions every time you read the text. Okay? We're trying to practice discipleship, and this is part of it right now, is actually being open and honest about some of our things that prevent us from moving into greater freedom. So the more honest you are, the more you're going to encourage your fellow man around you and sister to share openly about their fear and their pride. So I'm trying to think how we want to split this thing up. I guess as we go out the door, one person stays and the other one, that doesn't sound good. The one on the right and the one on the left, one shall be taken, the other shall be left. Those were not good passages. Maybe we have to devise another plan here. But maybe we can just split right down the middle here. Maybe we can do that. We go over this way, yep, this way, yep, that way, all right. Oh, no, I need you to go that way. Yeah, okay, all right. Right down there to Keith. Do you guys, Mr. Orange Shirt back there? Yep, that's you. So you're on this side, all right? So you guys over here are all going to go with me, okay? And you guys over here are all going to go with Candace. I'll go downstairs. Is there enough for me and my group downstairs? Enough chairs? Okay, so you guys go downstairs, and I don't know who's going to lead the charge because I have no idea how to get there. Okay, Keith is going to lead the charge. Candace, are you good? When you're done, just close in prayer, okay? And then we're just going to call it quits. All right, that's how we're going to close. Do you have any questions on this? So I just kind of close in prayer and...